Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our coverage of the Republican Party's budget law, which will give the ultra-rich a historic tax break and implement the largest cuts to Medicaid and SNAP benefits in U.S. history. 42 million families in the United States rely on SNAP to put food on their tables. Food banks across the country say they cannot keep up with demand. Before this law was passed and signed, Axios published research from Morning Consult that found an increasing share of Americans are going hungry. In May, just over 15% of adults say they sometimes or often do not have enough to eat. That is almost double the rate in 2021. The Republican budget law will make this crisis worse, causing 22 million families to lose some or all of their food assistance benefits, according to the Urban Institute. Today, we'll find out how California food banks and CalFresh are preparing. But first, we'll find out how this will affect communities in other parts of the country. The Baltimore Banner says the law will have an unmitigated disaster for Maryland children. 1 in 10 Maryland households get SNAP or food benefits. 369,000 families will be impacted. More than one-fifth of people in New Mexico receive SNAP benefits. That's one of the highest percentages in the country. This could affect 450,000 people in New Mexico. 1 in 8 families in North Carolina receive SNAP benefits. 52,000 people walked through the doors of the Keystone Community Food Center in St. Paul, Minnesota this year, which is a record. Here is Georgie Newen speaking with WCCO CBS Minnesota.
More demand translates to more funds spent on food and more resources available. We've needed to hire more staff. We had had to increase our food budget by 50%.
Changes to SNAP under the One Big Beautiful Bill include more stringent rules like expanded work requirements. Keystone Community Services is bracing for the impact.
Our workers are going to have to tell more people that they're not eligible and turn them away when their need is continuing to grow. The impact is just unimaginable at this point.
So that's what's happening in St. Paul, Minnesota. In Oklahoma, 1 in 6 people have used SNAP in the past year. Most of those homes have children. Here is a clip from News 9.
If you take, you kick somebody's legs out from under them, then what?
Rachel Conley leads Stillwater's Our Daily Bread Food and Resource Center.
It just puts everybody in a really hard spot.
She said there's a reason many Oklahomans need these resources.
The cost of living is high. And the money that people can make when they work is not.
Homeless Alliance CEO Megan Mueller works with people in these programs every day.
I completely reject the notion that people who, you know, are experiencing poverty or experiencing homelessness are lazy and that they can just make the choice to change their circumstance overnight. It's just not that simple.
Rachel sees the pain in people's eyes.
It's hard to ask for help
when they walk through these doors.
The majority of our guests who are on SNAP are embarrassed about it. We have so many elderly couples that'll come in and say, I would work, but no one will hire me. I'm 80.
She says people are making choices about her community 1,300 miles away.
No one sitting in those rooms making those decisions has called me to ask how my guests feel about it.
Choices that change the lives of people behind the numbers of a budget.
Kicking one support out of the way and just seeing who can make it is not anything of the America I want to be a part of.
And thanks to News 9 for letting us know how this is affecting people in Oklahoma. If you have any questions about these SNAP benefit cuts, if you are struggling with putting enough food on the table and you'd like to share your story, if you'd like, you can be anonymous. If you work in this field and would like to talk about how hunger is affecting your community, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Joining us today are three guests. Marshawn Tatman is Associate Director of Policy and Advocacy at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Hi, Marshawn. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Rose. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Allison Goodwin is president and CEO of the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. Hi, Allison. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Good morning.
Good morning. Maria Gutierrez is Outreach Associate with CalFresh. That is California's SNAP program. CalFresh provides monthly food benefits to individuals and families with low income. Nearly 5 million Californians receive CalFresh, according to the California Budget and Policy Center. Hi, Maria. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So, Maria, can you just give us the basics of how this program works for people who might not be familiar with it? So, in order to get SNAP, it used to be called food stamps, you have to apply. And I know of someone who once applied, and the process today is pretty intense. I mean, she said she had to fill out so much paperwork, and she found out she was only going to get about $25 a month. And so she felt that it just wasn't worth it. So can you just tell us how this process works?
Yes. So, you know, CalFresh is one of the most important hunger programs we have. And it can be a tedious process. That is why we are here for our community, and we establish, you know, our client service department to help the community go through the whole process. Applying, we assist them either in person or over the phone, and we help them pre-screen to make sure that they will be potentially eligible based on the required guidelines for CalFresh. That is the income guidelines, housing expenses, and so we help them fill out the application online through benefitscal.org. And then we help them gather all the documents that they're going to need in order to ensure that they are going to have a high chance of, you know, having a positive outcome, being approved for benefits.
And who is eligible for CalFresh?
So anyone is eligible for CalFresh as long as they meet the requirements. Those requirements would be income guidelines. It is based on the household size and the gross monthly income that the household receives.
What is the average benefit?
So if there is a household of one, they would be able to receive up to $295 a month. But it all depends, like I said, on the income that the household is receiving.
Right. So then people get a card. It's like a credit card. And let's say they get $150 a month. So they're able to use that in stores that accept CalFresh. And then what I'm hearing, and I listened to so many reports from across the country, is that a lot of people run out in the middle of the month, or let's say at the end of the month. And in that case, then they rely on the food bank. Is that what you're hearing from most of your clients?
Yes. So we do encounter situations where a lot of, you know, participants of the CalFresh program believe that, you know, the amount that they're receiving is not enough. We do have a website, foodnow.net, where we also provide a list of resources that they can also receive with their EBT card in order to help them sometimes stretch out those benefits. And that includes a program called Market Match. Now, there is participating farmers markets within Alameda County that are able to help you stretch your benefits for CalFresh. So that's something that a lot of people or community members are not aware of. But it's important to know that yes, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, the benefit amount received by the household may not be sufficient, but there is other resources out there that can help stretch out those benefits a little bit more.
Maria Gutierrez is Outreach Associate with CalFresh. That is California's SNAP program. And if you want to learn more about this program, you can go to benefitscal.com. We're also joined today by Allison Goodwin, President and CEO of the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. Allison, what else do we need to know about how this system works?
Really, for people that are, you know, maybe on the periphery of this, so listeners that are really just learning about what does this mean to the community, even if they're not one of the neighbors that are leveraging one of these programs, is the economic impact. So for example, the debit card that we referenced that somebody receives that they can use their benefit. So really, if it's $25 or $200, that's the equivalent to money that that client can use by going into their local grocery store, sourcing the food that's most culturally relevant and familiar and healthy and that's suitable for their family's needs. And the economic impact of that is that they're putting money into their local grocery store, which is connected to those food producers and the delivery drivers and the entire ecosystem of that community with those funds that are meant for food. So it's not just even the economic impact to the client saying, oh, wow, this is really helping me to get groceries on the table for the to get through the month. But it's really to the local community and local businesses that are welcoming those CalFresh dollars into their community.
And can you talk about what you hear from clients who have the CalFresh debit card and it just doesn't feed the family for the entire month? Is that when people come to the Redwood Empire Food Bank?
Certainly. So the idea of food assistance, I think it's a club that people are grateful it exists, but they're not necessarily growing up as a child hoping that it's a club they need to be in. And all of our services are considered supplemental groceries. So just like anyone would choose to go to the grocery store on their own accord and not wait in a specific line or have certain requirements to access food, nobody really wants to do those things. They do those things because they need to. So they'll go through the arduous paperwork and apply for CalFresh. They'll visit, you know, a food bank in their community and figure out how is it that they go and get fresh groceries or a warm meal. But all of that is supplemental. Realistically, any of the people that are turning to any of us for help, including CalFresh benefits, are likely not having all of their needs met. They are probably still needing to access other food resources, perhaps subsidized childcare, perhaps subsidized housing. We're in a very high cost area, as we all know from living here. And so if people can be fully employed and dual income earners and still having a hard time to meet just their basic needs of rent and health expenses and certainly food.
Right. And we'll talk about the work requirements later in the show. That is Allison Goodwin, president and CEO of the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. Marshawn Tatman is associate director of policy and advocacy at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Marshawn, what would you like to add? What do you think people need to know about how this system works?
Well, CalFresh is the leading anti-hunger program that the United States have for folks in need. Right now, we're seeing an abandonment of federal government responsibilities to make sure people that's on the brink of poverty have the resources they need to survive. That's all people are trying to do. We heard some of the talk, some of the rhetoric about fraud this, fraud that, but people are just trying to survive. And this program is critical in helping folks do that. It's estimated around 6 billion meals annually nationwide will be cut from these SNAP cuts.
Six billion.
And get this, Rose, for comparison, the entire Feeding America network is serving 6 billion meals as well. So where will we get another 6 billion meals from once these cuts truly start to hit? So it's a big gaping hole that can't be filled by the charitable food system. Millions of families with children and seniors across the country will be impacted by these cuts. We need strong policy to make sure that people don't go hungry. And SNAP is one of the most critical programs we have in addressing food insecurity in America.
Marshawn, I think it's so important to emphasize that San Francisco and Marin are just, it's such a wealthy, wealthy area. I mean, one of the wealthiest areas in the country. It also has some of the highest inequality. And people might be surprised to learn, according to the food bank, that one in five in San Francisco and Marin need food assistance.
Absolutely. I think Allison might have mentioned this, the cost of living is so high in our area where a couple can be making over $100,000 a year and still barely making ends meet. Personally, growing up in a two-parent household, both parents worked, we still struggled, but we were above the income threshold for the support we needed. So it was days when, you know, I went to school as a reduced price lunch payer, not having money to pay for lunch. So it's real. The consequences are real, especially in our area with the cost of living. 25,000 households will be affected in San Francisco and Marin combined.
What do you hear from clients, Marshawn? People who have the SNAP debit card, but it just doesn't go far enough.
We need to advocate for more funding. And we've seen steps taken during the pandemic where we were actually, you know, gaining ground on addressing food insecurity, but we took steps back. And what I'm talking about, during the pandemic, there was a boost in benefit allowance that gave folks the maximum amount of money so they can have the resources they needed to feed their family during that critical moment. And that's exactly what we need to do. We need to increase the benefits so people can make those dollars stretch further and not keep these benefits locked at an amount where it's not keeping up with the cost of living. And that's something we've seen with HR 1, the bill that everybody is referring to. It's not beautiful. It's actually a devastating bill that's going to make millions of people go hungry. So that was one of the things that we've seen out of that bill.
I'm glad you brought up what we saw under COVID. Allison, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this. We did so many shows about how during COVID, food stamp benefits were increased by 15% and every household saw a boost. I remember hearing stories. There was this one story from NPR that I'll never forget. This older woman said for the first time she was able to buy healthy food, and she actually saw a difference in her hair and her nails because she felt nourished. And it's just incredible to think about how even small amounts of money make such a difference. And then that money got taken away like that. So we see that we saw the difference of the positive changes that happen when the benefits go up, not even that much, but they mean so much to people who are struggling. And now we're going to see major, major declines.
True. So we did see a local impact really with those supplemental benefits of people being able to kind of fully make ends meet. So to your point of how many people are not making it through the month, it solved that problem. It allowed people to, you know, some would still have relied upon us as food banks in addition to their SNAP benefits, but the fact that their benefits were actually more self-sustaining and appropriate to get somebody through the month really was impactful. I will say the one kind of unexpected outcome of that time period when those supplemental benefits went away. So it was March of 2023, and there was this kind of announcement saying to people, you know, all of a sudden these COVID supplemental SNAP benefits are coming to an end. So people were going back to their baseline. And we saw monumental increases in participation at our food distributions. And that wasn't something that we anticipated because it was really much beyond the people that were accessing SNAP benefits that lost that supplement. This is an indication of the system of poverty and the system of food insecurity. Back to Marshawn talking about, you know, seniors living on a fixed income that rely on these benefits. They don't know the difference of Social Security, CalFresh, cost of living allocations on different things. Like they, it's scary. No matter what, talking about a benefit that they use to survive going away is terrifying to people. So we were seeing people that used to come, you know, once or twice a month were coming more frequently, and new people coming because they were just panicked. And that really was an indication of 2 years ago, let alone what we're going to be experiencing, you know, 2 years from now. I think it'll be all the people that are impacted, but also the fear and the uncertainty of the people that don't understand what's going away, don't understand why and how they're being impacted so dramatically. And we need to brace ourselves for what that's going to look like in our community.
Maria, what would you like to add about the differences that you saw with the COVID benefit increase, and then what happened when that went away?
Yeah, Rose, I've been working with the Alameda County Community Food Bank for 5 years. Initially, when I started working here, I assisted a senior community member apply. When they initially applied for the program, they were receiving $20 in benefits. During the pandemic, I remember one day they called me and they were like, "Honey, I have $300 in my account. I don't always use it. So did they make a mistake? Is there a mistake going on here?" And I said, "No. What happens is if you're not using your benefits, they're rolling over every month. And right now during COVID, there has been an increase to every household." And the joy that I heard in their voice was just magical to me. They were very excited because they were like, "Now I can buy more groceries. $20 was not enough." After COVID, and after, you know, that 15 increase was removed, they called me back and they're like, "Oh, honey, I'm back to my $20. She's like, "I'm still grateful. I'm still grateful that I'm receiving something, but you know, right now with the high price of food and cost of living, $20 is not enough." And so we hear that on a daily for not only seniors, but you know, families with children, single families, single parents, and it's devastating. But you know, we're here to, you know, provide the resources for our community. We're here to provide guidance. We have a helpline where, you know, community members are able to call and receive referrals to community pantries where they can receive a little bit extra. So they can, you know, like I mentioned earlier, stretch those benefits a little bit more.
Well, just to share some numbers, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, they're citing numbers from the Congressional Budget Office. Cuts for SNAP will be $187 billion through the year 2034. That is about 20%. And then according to the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, the Republican budget law will give the top 1% tax cuts totaling $1 trillion over the next decade. The bill's cuts to Medicaid will total $930 billion over the same period. So we are going to do a number of shows, and we have done a number of shows about this law, how it's going to affect families across the country. Today, we're focusing on SNAP benefits, used to be called food stamps. 42 million families rely on SNAP to put food on their tables. And so what happens is in the middle of the month, they might run out, and that's when they go to food banks and local organizations for help. And food banks across the country say even today they're having a hard time keeping up with demand. So if you have a story to share, a personal story, or if you work in your community and you see how difficult it is for people to put food on the table, we'd love to hear from you. You can also be anonymous if you'd like. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We should say that Republicans decided that these cuts for Medicaid and for food stamps will go into effect after the midterm elections. But a number of organizations are so concerned right now because things are tough right now, and they just have no idea how they're going to be able to get enough money to buy the additional food that people need. Today, we're joined by Marshawn Tapmon, Associate Director of Policy and Advocacy at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Allison Goodwin is President and CEO of the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. Maria Gutierrez is Outreach Associate with CalFresh, that is California's SNAP program. She also works with the Alameda County Food Bank. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss the starvation crisis in Gaza. More than 60,000 Palestinians have been killed, and those who've survived are now dealing with famine and widespread starvation. That is tomorrow. And then on Friday, we'll be speaking with the filmmaker Robert Greenwald about his new documentary about journalists in Gaza. So many Palestinian journalists in Gaza have also been killed. We hope you can join us for those shows. And if you have a guest idea or a show idea, you can email your call at kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about what is happening with the growing hunger crisis in this country, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. The Republican Party's budget law will give the ultra-rich a historic tax break and implement the largest cuts to Medicaid and SNAP benefits in U.S. history. And we're talking about this with Marshawn Tapmon, Associate Director of Policy and Advocacy at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank, Allison Goodwin, President and CEO of the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa, and Maria Gutierrez, Outreach Associate with CalFresh, that is California's SNAP program, which provides monthly food benefits to individuals and families with low income. Nearly 5 million Californians receive CalFresh. Maria also works with the Alameda County Food Bank. And we have a number of callers on the line, and we decided to keep everyone anonymous in case that, you know, makes you feel more comfortable to share your story. So let's go to our first caller. Thanks for calling into Your Call.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy that you're doing this program. I'd like to hear more specifics about, you know, adequacy and inadequacy. I think the maximum for a single person on food stamps is something like 200 and maybe a little more. But if you're quote-unquote too rich to get the full amount, you might get less. So for a single person, they might be giving you less than the maximum amount. But I think if we heard exactly what is going on with respect to the actual amounts, people would have a more concrete idea of how pretty basic, if not minimal, the SNAP benefits are. The other thing is, with regard to COVID, I think it would be important to mention how the politics was different, who was in charge, and how were those extra benefits obtained versus now when they're being chopped back from whatever they were pre-COVID.
Thank you so much. So here's what I found from the USDA, and let me know if this is on point. For a single person, the maximum is $292 a month. For a two-person household, the maximum is $536, and a four-person household can receive up to $975. Does that sound right to you, Maria?
Yes, Rose, that is correct.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I think that our caller brings up a really good point, because we're now hearing stories from people saying, I make $25 too much and now I cannot get benefits. So should I take a pay cut? Should I stop working? I mean, we really need to do a show about what amount you need to make in order to get benefits. And then what happens if you get a $2 an hour raise? It's still hard to make ends meet, but that means you can't get those benefits. So this, I think this part of all of these stories just need more attention. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely hear situations like that very common where we have a lot of calls where clients are looking to get pre-screened, and sometimes maybe by a few dollars they're over income and are ineligible for the program. What I would say is, you know, we provide other resources as well. Like I mentioned earlier, we have our food helpline where we can direct people to community pantries to receive food assistance. Our website, foodnow.net and comidaahora.net, you know, Alameda County residents are able to access our website to input their address and find community pantries. But with that said, it's definitely important for us to advocate and hope that, you know, these income guidelines can receive an increase, hoping that more community members who are struggling are able to be eligible for the program.
Marshawn, what would you like to add about eligibility? I mean, when you think about someone who makes maybe $10 or $50 over the limit who cannot get benefits, I mean, how do you justify that? Do you hear from people who have to deal with that?
You can't justify it. And like I alluded to earlier, I was one of those persons growing up where the parents just made over the threshold and we weren't eligible for benefits. As a person who may be hoping for these benefits, it's devastating to get that denial letter and knowing that you won't get any help. For a person who worked with the program, it's again devastating knowing that the client, the participant you're helping, is being denied because they're making $10 over the threshold. And that's a bigger issue that we need to address in America as a whole, is a living wage. Making sure folks go to work and make enough money so they can afford everything they need to afford, and not by working multiple jobs. And if you want to work multiple jobs, that's your right too. But we should be able to survive just off of one job with a living wage where we can support our family, support our household, buy food to put on the table, and to make sure that people don't go hungry. Mm-hmm. Food should be a human right.
Allison, what would you like to add about these thresholds?
Yeah, I think it's really about poverty, quite honestly. So like I referenced before, it's not usually clients are not unique to only needing food. So from a systemic standpoint, it's what about subsidized housing? What about subsidized childcare? Mm-hmm. Because if income guidelines are not adjusted simultaneously with, let's pretend there's a cost of living increase for somebody who, you know, gets a raise at work, or you know, there's a minimum wage increase in a certain community. Well, if there are not edits at the state level for what are those income guidelines for people to be eligible, then they are risking the safety net services that they have. So for example, if somebody's accessing subsidized childcare and they get a dollar raise, a 50 cent raise, I mean, you name it, it doesn't have to be very much money, that could jeopardize their eligibility entirely. It could make them over income. And so they've gone from having maybe a sliding scale or a really low access to subsidized childcare to no longer having subsidized childcare and then spending, I don't know, $1,500, $2,000 a month on childcare. Well, they don't even want the 50 cent raise then, because that's not giving them $2,000 more a month. And so really the fact that we're talking about SNAP and CalFresh today, but really our government and our leadership needs to understand the impact of any and all of these programs, and the people that are impacted by them are likely accessing health subsidies because they need to, and they're accessing housing and childcare and food because they need to. Again, it's not something that people just willy-nilly sign up for. It's something that quite literally their life and their health depends upon it.
And to your point, CalMatters reported in December that once those pandemic era safety net programs ended, we saw poverty go up again. California is grappling with significant levels of poverty, leading the nation as the state with the highest poverty rate. It disproportionately affects Black and Latino residents. 7.3 million people in California lack the resources to meet their basic needs. So that is important context. And one of our listeners, Rose, has a question about how food stamp benefits are calculated. She says, I have not been able to find this information anywhere. And so again, I was able to find some information from, and this is directly from the CalFresh website. So you can qualify for CalFresh as one person if you make $2,500 a month, for two people, $3,400 a month, three people, $4,300 a month, and four people, $5,200 a month. Is that right, Maria?
Yes, that is correct, Rose.
Okay, so those are the numbers, and you can find those if you search online. And thank you for that question. Let's go to our next caller. Hi, thank you for holding.
Is that me? Can you
hear
me?
Yes, that's you.
Great. Hi. So I have a number of things I want to mention. First of all, I was on CalFresh just recently, and I got so petrified from the Trump administration and all the data privacy issues that are happening that I called them and I said, I don't want this anymore, even though I need it, because I don't want my data. I don't want my life to be, you know, on somebody's list and me have all this, you know, level of discrimination. So I just want to mention that the fear is real. Mm-hmm. And I am a pretty empowered person. And I don't have immigration issues or any of those issues, but I was really afraid and I just got off it. Number one. Number two, I was volunteering at a food bank for 6 months. And I was shocked. I'm an African American that I saw barely no African Americans at all going to the food banks. I volunteered at two in San Francisco. I found that very shocking. And I'm not sure what that's about, but I feel like there is kind of a culture of some people get to get the food and other people don't for whatever reason, or maybe they don't want to. I don't know. But I'd love to talk about race and food in this culture and in this discourse or another discourse, because I think that that's something that gets overlooked. Who actually goes to these food banks, even though they say Black and brown, barely ever see any Black. And my third comment and my final comment is, when I was volunteering at the food bank in San Francisco, this was 6 months ago, a lot of us who volunteered also got food at the end, whatever was left. Every week, there was less and less and less and less food. And it was startling to me how fast that happened, to a point where we were now volunteering and we weren't getting anything. Maybe one of us would leave with an orange or an onion, but that was it. And I just saw that. And so I can't even imagine what's going to happen now. That was 6 months ago. So I just wanted to make those comments. And yeah.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad you brought all of this up. What you said about deciding not to continue with SNAP because you don't want all of your information shared. So this is a really important issue. Just 2 days ago, CalMatters had a piece about this. And the piece says, California and 18 other Democrat-led states and Washington, D.C. are suing the Trump administration to halt the U.S. Department of Agriculture from collecting sensitive information about people who receive SNAP. The Trump administration told states to provide the data by July 30th or risk losing federal funding to administer the program. California receives $1.3 billion annually to distribute $12 billion a year to 5 million residents who receive these benefits. Michigan's Attorney General Dana Nessel said the purpose of what the Trump administration is doing here is to target immigrant communities, and this sends a chilling effect to American citizens. What are your thoughts about this, Allison? I mean, it's devastating to hear that our caller says that she doesn't want this data out there, and so therefore she's not receiving her benefits.
It's a valid concern, and we're hearing that more and more. So no different than her story saying, you know, it's not even that she has concerns about immigration, which is something that a lot of people also are concerned about. It's really just nobody wants to be on a list that could also be targeted for anything, quite honestly, any sort of retaliatory, what about people's taxes? What about where they live? What about how they spend their other dollars or their Social Security? And so it is a valid concern that people are saying it's not worth the risk for the $25 a month to also have, you know, their data available, you know, really to unknown sources at this point. I will say that we are struggling with that too, sort of as a food bank and as a trusted entity in our community, is to say none of us want any more data than we have to hold about clients for that same reason. We don't want it to be that we're approached and having to give up somebody's personal information when, quite frankly, it's nobody's business. It doesn't really matter exactly where they live or what their name is. They're coming for food to feed their family. And so it shouldn't matter their demographics. It shouldn't matter what color their skin is. They're hungry, and it shouldn't matter.
Marshawn, what are you hearing from people about this, and how is the San Francisco Marin Food Bank going to deal with this? Today is the deadline. The administration is telling states to provide this data by today or risk losing federal funding to administer the program.
It's scary, and it's a threat that we can't take lightly. We've seen some of the actions going on around all our areas with ICE and them targeting folks. So it's real. We just want to make sure that we ensure that when people come to our space, it's welcoming, it's signage, letting you know where public areas are, not so public areas. It's something that people think about every day, like the caller shared. She no longer want her benefits because of the data just being so loosely out there, and whoever federal hands that want to look at it at that point in time. So it's something that folks have to think about, especially undocumented folks, because we've seen what's been happening, even at the court hearings where people is getting picked up after court. You can get picked up, and you can, this administration is definitely deporting people. So it's frightening out there, Rose, to keep it short.
Well, thank you for the question. I also was wondering if you could address the question our caller had about what she has seen at the food bank when she has volunteered, that there are very few people of color at the food bank. Marshawn, what do you see at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank?
So I just want to say this overall, we're a nonpartisan food bank. So we don't take sides when it comes to Republicans or Democrats. I just want to throw that out there for the last question. But yeah, Rose, could you repeat that question? I'm sorry.
Yeah, our last caller said she has been volunteering at the food bank, and she's been surprised that she has seen so few people of color, and she wonders why that is.
So in some cases, and I know this personally, it depends off how comfortable a person is waiting in the line, are the relationships you have in the neighborhood, in our case, with our neighborhood pantries. So in the caller case, he probably didn't see a lot of people of color in the lines, but we do have partner networks that we work with in the community that service every race in the community. No matter who you are, what walks of life you come from, they will service you. So we have partner pantries in Black communities that work with, for instance, churches in those communities to reach people of color. As far as why people wasn't waiting in line, like I said, some folks just probably wasn't comfortable waiting in a line, or some folks just want to deal with that relationship that they established throughout the years to receive their groceries allocation. And I think that was the case.
She also said that she's very concerned because she's seen less and less food when the volunteers go home, because the volunteers are able to take food home. I want to read a couple emails. We'll get two more phone calls, and then we'll get final thoughts from our guests. Mofry writes in, and Mofry says, "Hi, Marshawn." Mofry writes, "I work in a local food pantry. We're a volunteer organization. Since January, we have seen an increase of 25% in usage. We now see up to 390 families every week to get supplemental food. At the start of the year, it was about 280. We are seeing middle-class folks who have never thought they would ask for help, but they have to because of layoffs in their families. We recover 380,000 pounds of food every year from grocery stores, which otherwise would have gone to the landfill. We're stumbling every week to meet the demand. It is growing every week. We're a local food pantry operating out of a borrowed space in the back of a church. 40% of our clients walk to obtain food. 38% of our clients are elderly." Thank you so much for the email, Mofry. Howard writes, "I'm a 72-year-old single man living in subsidized housing in the Bayview. My income is $2,000 per month. My rent is $1,200. I get SNAP benefits of $125 a month. I volunteer at the food bank every Friday and take home a bag of veggies, fruit, and pasta or rice. We used to get meat from time to time, but more recently, the only protein we get is eggs. The $125 is gone by the middle of the month. By the way, SNAP benefits cannot be used for soap, detergent, razors, or other necessities of life." Thank you for sharing that, Howard. And so many other people are dealing with the same situation where the SNAP benefits are gone by the middle of the month. And then people go to the food banks. But now with these cuts, how are they going to make that up? Let's take a few more callers and then we'll get responses from our guests. Hi, thanks so much for holding.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi. Hi, Greg.
Yes, hi. A couple of things. Thanks to our Christian brothers and sisters in Congress and in the state legislature, we live, with a safety net, which is really a bad joke. I mean, I live on SSI. About $900 of that comes from the federal government, another $300 from the state. I get about $240 in food stamps. I was surprised to hear $292 could be for a single person, but try to live on that. I mean, seriously, I don't know how many people in your audience who are listening can even manage. I mean, Trader Joe's is the only grocery store where I live that I could really afford to shop at. Mm-hmm. So, and if people think things are bad now, wait till 2026 comes around. This whole thing about, I don't know if this is true or not, but on the SSI that I get and most people get, it's less than the minimum wage, federal minimum wage, which I think is $7.25 or $7.50 an hour. So these programs are just designed to keep people in poverty. I mean, that's essentially it. And it's disgraceful that our elected officials cannot do something humane about this.
Well, thank you for that, Greg. And the federal minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. We've got just about 3 minutes left. What are your final thoughts? And how are you all preparing? Maria, how is the Alameda County Food Bank preparing? And what are you hearing from other food banks across the state?
Yes, we are preparing by, trying to meet our community where they're at. Just alone, last fiscal year, July 2024 to June 2025, we accomplished 712 outreach events. For us, it's not just being in person assisting clients with the application process, but also going out to the community, distributing information to our community. We were able to distribute 96,000 pieces of material to Alameda County residents, just providing them information regarding the program, and just being prepared by being there for our community, allowing them to feel like they're able to reach out to us and ask any question without fear of being judged. That's what we're here for. Many community members call with questions regarding the immigration process, of the fear that they have. And it's, as an outreach associate, Rose, it's totally devastating hearing these community members being afraid to come to us, being afraid to utilize the resources that are available to them when they are in need. Because, you know, one in four Alameda County residents are experiencing some level of food insecurity.
One in four.
Wow. And when these type of conversations are out there, like you mentioned earlier, you know, that chilling effect is immense. You know, it puts fear even on families who are not 100% or fully impacted by these regulations, but it puts fear in all the community. So, you know, we're here to support every community member who has any question and who is, you know, looking for some comfort.
Maria Gutierrez is Outreach Associate with CalFresh. That is California's SNAP program. She also works with the Alameda County Food Bank. Allison, how are you all at the Redwood Empire Food Bank preparing? And we have about 30 seconds.
I would say it depends on who's asking. So if there are audience members that say, I need to help, and they want to donate, you know, time, money, and food, I implore them to do so, because we are all, you know, otherwise in crisis. I mean, really, the government has created a really challenging position for all of us on the front lines of hunger. However, if it's a participant, I wouldn't say that they should be fearful. I think that we all still strive to, you know, be here for decades to come and provide supplemental groceries to them in a safe and accessible way. So take that with a grain of salt, depending on who you are and listening. If you need us, we're there for you. And if you want to help, we'd love to have you join us.
Allison Goodwin is president and CEO of the Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa. And very brief final thoughts from you, Marshawn.
And for us, we're working to educate the community, working with partners to see if they can even expand capacity, because that's an issue right now without the resources. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at this in a different way. We're opening up something called community markets, and we're reaching out to our network for volunteers and to encourage folks to donate, because nonprofits can't work without either. We need the manpower to move the product and the donations to help us fund operations.
Marshawn Tatman is Associate Director of Policy and Advocacy at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Thank you all for your work. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.